Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Tuesday, September 26, 2023. The head of Sudan's Sovereign Council says he's ready to talk peace with the paramilitary rapid support forces.
Eventually.
After the war is over, followed by security arrangements, we will for sure move to the second phase of conducting a political dialogue that leads to forming a civilian government to oversee a transitional period paving the way for elections.
And the Commission of Yei River County denounces attacks on humanitarian workers returning from delivering aid to families in need.
There was no any sign that this is a military vehicle. There was a full tank of UNICEF in the front of the vehicle and by the sides of the vehicles.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The leader of Sudan's armed forces, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, says he wants the conflict with the paramilitary rapid support forces to stop and move toward a civilian government. VOA's senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashanawi has the details.
In his speech to the United Nations General Assembly on Thursday, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan called for designating the rapid support forces as a terrorist organization. However, in an interview with Al Hurra TV, al-Burhan hinted that if the RSF leadership pulled its troops out of residential areas and returns to its barracks, he would sit with any of them to negotiate an end to the conflict. Fighting between the army and the RSF broke out in mid-April over plans for a political transition and the integration of the RSF into the army. In his Al Hurra interview, Burhan pledged to transfer power to a civilian government eventually.
After the war is over, followed by security arrangements, we will for sure move to the second phase of conducting a political dialogue that leads to forming a civilian government to oversee a transitional period paving the way for elections.
Burhan spoke to Al Hurra in New York while he was there for the UN General Assembly. Al Hurra is an independent broadcaster funded by the U.S. Agency for Global Media, which is VOA's parent agency. Burhan denied that he is forming a government and ruled out the idea that Sudan could be divided if the RSF established a rival government in the areas under its control.
I don't think Sudanese have any separatist tendencies, whether in Darfur, Kordofan, or Central Sudan. Sudanese are all determined to keep Sudan united, and they can solve all of their problems among themselves.
Burhan told Al Hurra that he has evidence that there are external parties providing weapons and support to the rapid support forces, but didn't identify any country in particular. He said, "The Saudi Peace Initiative is so far the best approach to end the conflict in Sudan." He said he thinks the stalled talks, co-sponsored by Saudi Arabia and the United States, still could succeed and hinted that he may go to Saudi Arabia soon. Several ceasefire agreements brokered by Saudi Arabia and the United States mediators have failed to end the violence so far. Mohammed Al-Shinawi, VOA News, Washington.
Still on Sudan, some civil society activists from Darfur say the nearly 4 months of communication and internet blackout in the region has affected the delivery of humanitarian services to civilians trapped by the fighting. A member of a newly created Darfur advocacy group blames the Sudan Armed Forces and the RSF for cutting off Darfur from the rest of the country. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Juba.
Advocate Abdul Basit Al-Haj says the group aims to facilitate the delivery of essential humanitarian aid to the civilians affected by the ongoing conflict between the Sudan Armed Forces and the Rapid Support Forces. He says access to communication and the internet is a global human right and urges authorities to restore internet services to civilians.
Nobody knows what's happening inside exactly. And in the meantime, they are bounding the movement of the citizens from Zalinge to the another area in Darfur, across Darfur. So it's like a war crime.
Since May 17th, Zalinge, a town in central Darfur state, has experienced a complete disruption of communication and internet services due to intense clashes between the SAV and the RSF. The towns of Al Janina, capital of West Darfur state, and Niala, capital of South Darfur state, also experienced a complete blockout. Al-Haj emphasized that destroying the communication facilities could constitute a war crime.
Citizens are living in a very critical situation, and it perhaps going to be worse in the next days. So that's why we support this campaign, and we call the whole world to reflect the situation inside Zalinge as well in whole Darfur.
Asad Tahir, an executive member of a local NGO, Community Empowerment for Development, says a lack of communication in most parts of Darfur is hindering the delivery of aid. He alleges that there are dozens of atrocities committed in the area, adding that the outside world is not informed due to the lack of communication.
The displaced persons are in high need of essential services, but due to lack of communication, the aid agencies are unable to know exactly what their needs are because there is no enough information available.
Halima Ali, member of the Darfur Women Association, says traditional leaders who have been playing a major role in reconciliation among tribes are unable to communicate among themselves. She warns this could lead to further conflict.
Social division that had happened across the country, and especially in Darfur, is a dangerous sign for possible civil war. Social grouping in Darfur is on rise due to the ongoing war.
Brigadier General Nabil Abdullah, a spokesperson of the Sudan Armed Forces, says the army has not destroyed any communication facilities in Darfur. Abdullah accused what he calls rebels for deliberately targeting communications towers and destroyed them. VOA reached out to Izzet Youssef, the political advisor for the RSF's commander, for comment on this story, but he declined. Eric Oneko, the spokesperson for the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, told VOA last month that aid agencies face difficulties in delivering assistance.
You know, we don't have secure passage to reach people in need. We're also facing what we're calling bureaucratic impediments. That means, you know, travel restrictions. We need authorization to travel. We're also having difficulty, not just the United Nations, but our partners are also having difficulty securing visas for staff to come into the country to do the work that we need to do.
The United Nations says the Sudan conflict has displaced more than 5.25 million people, one in every 10 people across Sudan, inside and outside the country, since clashes erupted on April 15th. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
Still on Sudan, medics warn that the outbreak of dengue fever and acute watery diarrhea have killed hundreds in Sudan. According to the French news agency AFP, the Sudanese Doctors' Union is warning of, quote, catastrophic spreads that could overwhelm the country's decimated health system. They say in a statement that the health situation in southeastern state of Gadarif on the border with Ethiopia is worsening at a horrific rate, with thousands infected with dengue fever. Although Gadarif has been spared from the direct effects of the brutal conflict between the regular army and the paramilitary rapid support forces, it has been impacted by mass displacement and other humanitarian crises. The United Nations says more than 5 months into the conflict, 80% of hospitals in Sudan are out of service. The AFP says that before the conflict, the healthcare system struggled to contain the annual disease outbreaks that accompany the country's rainy season starting in June, including malaria endemic in Sudan and dengue fever. This year, Gadarif hosting upwards of 250,000 internal displaced persons, according to the UN. The situation is much worse. Dengue fever is a mosquito-borne disease that causes high fever, headaches, nausea, vomiting, muscle pain, and, in the most serious cases, bleeding that can lead to death. Medics and the UN have repeatedly warned that the violence in Sudan, combined with the rainy season and devastated infrastructure, could cause disease outbreaks. UN and local officials in South Sudan are condemning an attack on aid convoy along the Jubaye Road, which left two UNICEF contractors dead and another injured over the weekend. The UN's acting humanitarian coordinator in South Sudan condemned the attack. Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Major General Lulroy Kwong, the spokesperson of the South Sudan People's Defense Forces, or SSPDF, says rebels of the National Salvation Front attacked the trucks contracted by UNICEF.
It was carried out by NASAL. That's why they were so quick to apportion blame. You know what they have? They have mobile infantry units that are moving on foot. They would come closer to the main road, and then as soon as they strike, they would flee deep into the interior, into forested areas.
Hamida Leseko, UNICEF country representative in South Sudan, issued a statement deploring the attack and added that when attacks occur, it is children and women that suffer. The rebels of the National Salvation Front, or NAS, distanced itself from the attack. NAS military spokesperson Yongle Emmanuel Thomas issued a statement over the weekend alleging that the area of the attack is under the control of some militia allied to the South Sudan People's Defense Forces. Agre Cyrus Kanyikwara, the commissioner of Yei County, described the incident as unfortunate. He says the victims were returning to Juba after delivering relief food and medicines to families in Yei River County.
It was an indiscriminate killing, indiscriminate attack, ambush, as they were traveling, they fall into fire. So there was no armed person in the vehicle. There was no any sign that this is a military vehicle. There was a full tag of UNICEF in the front of the vehicle and by the sides of the vehicles.
James Maiden, the chief of communications at UNICEF South Sudan, says the delivery of the food supplies to Yei is part of distribution of life-saving medical, nutrition, water, sanitation, and education supplies UNICEF is conducting to save lives. Maiden says UNICEF condemns the incident.
Two trucks were attacked Saturday morning while returning to Juba after delivering crucial aid supplies for children and their families to Yei in central Equatoria state. Unfortunately, two contracted drivers were shot and killed and another one was injured. And both trucks, which were empty and returning to Juba, were burnt and destroyed.
Maiden says attacks on aid workers threatened the delivery of aid across the country, adding that UNICEF has paused delivering aid to area Yei River County.
Due to the attack, currently UNICEF has paused movement of supplies to that area and is urging government to step up security on the roads and bring those responsible to justice.
Commissioner Cyrus says the attack could have been carried out by the National Salvation Front or NAS rebels.
This is a brutal killing. It is unnecessary. It is a violation of humanitarian laws. And this to me, it amounts, if this is done by what I believe should be people aligned or affiliated to the National Salvation Front, then the National Salvation Front is no longer a legitimate rebellion group, but it is a criminal group.
According to aid workers' security database records, major incidents of violence against the aid workers as of 14th August 2023, 113 aid workers were attacked, including 62 fatalities, 34 kidnappings, and 89 people wounded. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, some South Sudanese politicians and activists react to President Salva Kiir's speech to the UN General Assembly. Stay tuned for that story.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what image do you think your country has internationally?
My country internationally has a very good image based on its level of security, the gender involvement of women in decision making, and its cleanliness.
Internationally, my country, we are seen as a hospitable country and very friendly and, you know, a strong country to us all.
It is good because, okay, in other areas like the tourism side of it, the security side of it, let me say like the locally, like these days we don't have like political instabilities in the country.
My country at the moment, I think it has one of the poorest image because look at the taxes my country is imposing.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Some South Sudanese politicians and an activist are reacting to President Salva Kiir's speech delivered at the UN General Assembly in New York last week. President Salva Kiir highlighted some of the challenges facing the implementation of the 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement. But the deputy chairperson of the SPLM-IO says he doubts if President Kiir was realistic in his speech about his willingness to implement the 2018 Peace Agreement. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
In his address to the UN General Assembly in New York last week, President Salva Kiir highlighted some of the challenges facing the implementation of the 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement in South Sudan. Kiir called on the United Nations to lift the armed embargo imposed on South Sudan in 2018. He pledged to expedite the implementation of the pending task in the agreement in order to conclude the transitional period with fair, transparent, and credible elections in 2024. But Oyet Nathaniel Pierino, the deputy chairperson of the SPLM-IO, says he doubts if President Kiir was realistic in his speech about his willingness to implement the peace agreement in the country.
Actions must follow the words. We cannot only talk about implementation and then we do the contrary. This is our reservation as the SPLM and SPLM-IO. We want implementation to be practical, so we cannot be blamed for anything. We have submitted names. The parade is not being announced. We can't go and snatch these names and announce it by ourselves. When the agreement says, it is the president to do so.
Gabriel Changson Chang is the chairman of South Sudan Federal Democratic Party and senior member of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, or SOA. He says despite the president's remarks on elections, he does not believe it would be possible to conduct elections. Changson argues that if elections are to be held in 2024, the transitional government of national unity should first complete the conditions in the security arrangement.
This process, once the unification process is done, then they will now be national forces for the Republic of South Sudan. In this regard, their unification will make it easier for the elections to be conducted peacefully, and the results will be credible because they will be the ones to protect the elections. Without them, and we go to elections with divided forces, then it will be difficult to protect that election.
Karbina Lual, the acting secretary general of the other political parties, or OPP, declined to comment on President Kiir's speech.
The chairman umbrella, Peter Mayenne, is going to align on this issue in conference. So we have leadership, but concerned about the peace agreement, we are going through the leadership. So it's not assigned me to talk about it, but also we agree to talk about this issue.
SPLM faction loyal to President Kiir described the speech to the UN's General Assembly as perfect. Jacqueline Nasiwa heads the Center for Inclusive Governance, Peace and Justice, a women's rights organization in South Sudan. She welcomes the president's speech on the implementation of the revitalized peace agreement. She cautions the signatories of the 2018 peace to avoid blame games.
We have heard from both sides, which is each one having their different point of view. But I'm saying that they are all part of the Artigon. They need to sit down quickly and discuss this matter and come out with one resolution. That will help us as South Sudanese to understand which direction the country is going.
The 2018 revitalized peace agreement requires the signatories to draft a permanent constitution, form a national unified army and transitional justice, and ensure the return of refugees before holding elections in 2024. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
An international risk analysis group says Africa's economic progress is threatened by an increasingly polarized world, with the continent suffering the fallout from several geopolitical crises. For VOA News, Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
Control Risks and Oxford Economics Africa find that the war in Ukraine, a global surge in inflation, security fragility and climate shocks are hampering development on the continent. The group's new report says these events have exacerbated uncertainty and forced geopolitical changes that could redefine Africa's role on the global stage. Political and business risk analyst Vincent Rouget says growing competition among China, the United States and Russia in Africa is polarizing the continent.
And we see more and more foreign policy of these countries towards Africa being more transactional, trying to get African countries to align with their foreign policy views. And that is posing a challenge to many African countries who don't want to align, who want to continue to be able to trade, to receive investment from as many partners as possible. So we're seeing this interesting game on the part of many African countries that are trying to maintain a non-aligned stance, but also trying to make the most of this growing geopolitical competition. And there are areas, for example, minerals, where that competition could be playing to Africa's advantage.
Roger says South Africa, in many ways, epitomizes the continent's complex relations with the rest of the world. The African National Congress, ANC, administration says it's neutral but is edging ever closer to Moscow, while some in Washington threaten to cut trade benefits to Pretoria.
South Africa illustrates probably more the pitfalls of that polarization, where we've seen the country's reputation, particularly in the US, take a bit of a hit. The country is still trying to find a balance between the US, between Russia, between China. But we've seen in the case of South Africa to what extent this geopolitical fragmentation can now act as a bit of a drain on investment, on investor sentiment, on the stock exchange as well, and on the rand as well.
At a recent U.S.-South Africa Business Forum meeting in New York, President Cyril Ramaphosa insisted a lot of South Africa's problems are not of its own making. He highlighted an international trading system that he said favored richer countries.
We want to have a rules-based trading system in the world, and we want to promote more multilateralism so that all countries in the world should be able to be treated fairly, to trade fairly, and to be able to attract investments into their own economies.
But Roger says there's a high level of risk associated in investing in South Africa because of domestic issues.
One on the economic side is the impact that the power crisis is having on growth, on consumer sentiment, on investor sentiment. It is also the approaching elections due next year and the feeling that the administration is struggling to send consistent policy signals towards investors in a number of areas. And we're at a time where investors in a number of sectors, be it the energy sector, the mining industry, to name just a couple, are really craving consistent policy direction, which the government seems unable to give at the moment.
The report elaborates on what many regional economists are saying, that many other African economies, particularly in North and East Africa, are developing faster than South Africa's, with higher growth rates and much less unemployment. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
From Johannesburg, we come back here in Washington, where Republican presidential candidates will spar in their second debate. The venue chosen for the debate brings back the views of a former president who still serves as a conservative model to the party. VOA's senior Washington correspondent Caroline Presutti brings us this debate preview.
Here, in what is hallowed ground for many Republicans, top GOP presidential candidates will face off for a second time. This is the library of the 40th president of the United States, Ronald Reagan, who remains an icon for conservative Republicans.
Part of living better electrically.
He began life in the public eye as an actor and liberal Democrat before switching to the Republican Party. As a popular two-term president of the 1980s, he held up conservative values, pushing for small government, low taxes, and more money for defense. Known as the great communicator, some of his simple, direct words changed history.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Reagan has supplanted Abraham Lincoln is the most popular Republican in American history.
Craig Shirley worked for the Reagan campaign and in the Reagan White House. He's also written 6 books on him. He says the current Republican candidates will likely compare themselves to Reagan during the debate. They include former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, South Carolina Senator Tim Scott, former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, biotech investor Vivek Ramaswamy, and former Vice President Mike Pence.
Mike Pence certainly evokes Reagan-esque positions on issues, as does Nikki Haley, as does Ramaswamy.
Ramaswamy argued in the first debate that China is more concerning than Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Former U.N. Ambassador Haley questioned the younger candidate's lack of foreign policy experience. Reagan, who was the oldest president in history at the time, quipped about age during a debate.
I am not going to exploit for political purposes my opponent's youth and inexperience.
Again, the Republican frontrunner, former President Donald Trump, will skip this debate. In August, Haley called him the most disliked politician in America, and Christie and Pence called for his disqualification. But Ramaswamy called Trump the best president of the 21st century. Author Ian Morgan says Reagan would be uncomfortable with that type of discord and with the current tone of politics.
He was a very modest man, very personable man, and boasting did not come naturally to him. And that's something that isn't quite fitting into the current Republican mold.
But Reagan's memorable one-liners still work.
Are you better off than you were 4 years ago?
That question remains a staple of presidential campaigns. On Wednesday night, presidential candidates will try to convince voters they can lead the Republican Party back into the White House. Carolyn Presutti, VOA News, Simi Valley, California.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday, September 26. We now take you to my village for some traditional Baka song. We have been listening to some traditional Baka song from Maridi County in Western Equatoria State. The Baka are found in South Sudan and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, David Greenberg, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.